inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldview.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to the program. At the Core here on American Family Radio. I'm Walker Wildman. The show is hosted by myself and our good friend, Rick Green. Rick's on with you each Tuesday and Thursday, and then I have the honor of being with you Monday, Wednesday, Friday of each week. And so, Rick and I appreciate you listening to the program. Once again, this is At the Core. We try to drive down into the core of what's going on in our culture and our nation. And of course, when you do that, you uncover the spiritual realm, the spiritual angle, if you will, biblically speaking. And so that's what we try to do here on the show each week. We're in Psalm chapter 70 this week. We've been in Psalm for at least 70 weeks. And so here we are continuing our study of the book of Psalm. David's writing here, the author of the book of Psalms. And David says in verse 70, 4 and 5, he says, "May all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you," talking about being glad in the Lord. "May those who love your salvation say evermore, God is great. But I am poor and needy. Hasten to me, O God. You are my help and my deliverer. O Lord, do not delay." And so here we have really two approaches that David's taking here when he's petitioning the Lord, which he does frequently. He starts out by saying that may we all rejoice, may all who seek the Lord rejoice and be glad in the Lord. But he also recognizes and confesses his placement, his place before the Lord, and his status, if you will, or his where he is. He says, "I am poor and needy. Hasten to me. Come to me, O God. You are my help and my deliverer." So I think it's important that as believers, as Christians, that we recognize and confess our place before the Lord and our a need. You know, David's not shy about his need for God. He is upfront and honest about his deep need for God as his helper and his deliverer. So I think a dose of humility is good for us to recognize our placement before the Lord, which is a placement really of humility and desperation is where we are in need of Almighty God's help. So that's what David highlights there in Psalm chapter 70. Part of what he highlights. Hey, we've got a couple events coming up in the next several months. We're going to be here in Tupelo, Mississippi, at the city of our national headquarters, having our annual Marriage Family Life Conference. That's coming up in July, the first weekend in July, July 6th through the 8th. If you want to register, go over to marriagefamilylife.net, marriagefamilylife.net, or you can go to afa.net/events. That's the easier URL to remember. afa.net/events. So we've got our Marriage Family Life Conference in July that we want you to come to. So registration is going to close in about 2 weeks. May 12th is when registration is going to close there. So we need those of you procrastinators out there in the Procrastinator Club to go ahead and register for our Marriage Family Life Conference in July, July 6th through the 8th, afa.net/events. So that's going on in July. And then in October, myself, my brother Wesley, and the Addisons, Will and Mickey, and our families, we'll all be at the Ark Encounter in Kentucky. We'll be there for about a day and a half, having some events together with our supporters, with our audience here at the Ark Encounter. So you're not going to want to miss that either. So if you live in that area, you know, there's a couple states that really intersect there. But if you live in that region, or if you don't, you just want to fly over or drive over, that's great too. You can also find a link to that event at afa.net/events. Once again, AFA at the Ark is the name of the event. I'll be there. with my wife and children, and the Addisons, and my brother Wesley and his wife and children will be there. So we'll all be at AFA at the Ark in October. We do have limited availability there just because of the size of the facility, and we want to make it much more of a personal event, an intimate event where we can interact with our audience and interact with you. So I think we're looking at about 80 to 100 families, so about 400 people total is our max there in at AFA at the Ark. But all of these events you can find at afa.net/events, afa.net/events. The story I want to get to this segment, and then we have a guest in the second and the third, but the story I want to get to now has to do with what's going on our southern border and the whole topic of illegal immigration. And this is a rather new development, at least in the grand decades long story of our southern border and federal government just not wanting to get a hold and a grip of what's going on down there, and completely unsecure, by the way. But this has to do with these minors, what they classify unaccompanied minors. These are people 18 or below that are coming across the southern border, and they don't have a parent, or they don't have a close family member or relative there to accompany them to basically carry them across the southern border. So that's where the term unaccompanied minors come from. But what happens to these kids once they get into the U.S. has been kind of a mystery. I mean, we know that the Department of Homeland Security apprehends them, and they go through processing. But after that, it's just kind of a mystery. At least it has been for your average person, for your average citizen. And we're starting to get a little more light shed on this whole situation. I want to play a clip. Just to kick us off here, this is there was a House hearing, and then, by the way, this is important. You can say, well, you know, it didn't matter whether Republicans or Democrats are in charge in Washington; it's all bad. You know, they're not doing much good at all. Well, I can't really argue with that, but I can, and here's why: if the Republicans didn't control the House of Representatives, this hearing wouldn't exist. So we wouldn't find all this. There would be no whistleblowers. There would be no sworn testimony. All right, so that does count for something. Okay, I'm not, you know, yay Republicans, no, but this stuff wouldn't happen. We wouldn't have this news story had it not been for this hearing. So there is something to be said there. But this whistleblower from the Health and Human Services, Tara Lee Rodas, is a whistleblower. She testified before Congress, and listen to how she outlines this whole operation of unaccompanied minors and what the federal government does here. Let's listen.
I have to confess, I knew nothing about their suffering until 2021 when I volunteered to help the Biden administration with the crisis at the southern border. As part of Operation Artemis, I was deployed to the Pomona Fairplex Emergency Intake Site in California to help HHS, Office of Refugee Resettlement, reunite children with sponsors in the United States. I thought I was going to help place children in loving homes. Instead, I discovered that children are being trafficked through a sophisticated network that begins with recruiting in home country, smuggling to the U.S. border, and ends when ORR delivers a child to a sponsor. Some sponsors are criminals and traffickers and members of transnational criminal organizations. Some sponsors view children as commodities and assets to be used for earning income. This is why we are witnessing an explosion of labor trafficking. Now, whether it's intentional or not, it could be argued that the United States government has become the middleman in a large-scale, multi-billion-dollar child trafficking operation that is run by bad actors seeking to profit off of the lives of children. As for me, my interest is the safety of the children. I do not view this as a political issue. I view this as a humanitarian issue.
So that's a sworn testimony by the whistleblower that used to work for the Department of Health and Human Services. And very recently, by the way, under the Biden administration, she was deployed down to Texas to help process these young children. Listen to these numbers, all right? In fiscal year 2020, so basically under the Trump administration, in fiscal year 2020, there were 33,000 unaccompanied minors unaccompanied children that arrived at the border and were processed. Listen to this. In fiscal year 2021, the next year, 146,000. 146,000. Then in fiscal year 2022, 152,000. Here's where we are this year, just year to date. So far in fiscal year 2023, there have been more than 70,000 encounters of unaccompanied children. And so this is astonishing. Here's the hoax. Here's the lie. A lot of people want to think that the majority of these children that cross the border alone are with a smuggler or with a coyote. They do so and they get paired with a family member when they get here. And that's just not true. Remember the media was just getting all upset about, you know, kids in cages under the Trump administration. Oh, kids in cages. Well, no. They were in a processing facility where they had to have some kind of physical barriers up to control the flow of people. I mean, you can go to a football game and go, people in cages, people in cages. No, that's a perimeter fence that tells you where the football facility starts. It's not a cage. It's absurd. And they ran the kids in cages hoax out there and got everybody all riled up. Kids in cages. No. There's no kids in cages. We're not animals. All right? We're the best country on the planet. And we got the best living conditions, even for illegal immigrants. So, no, there's no kids in cages. There's facilities that have fencing around them. But nonetheless, here's the shocking part of it, if this isn't already shocking enough. Of the several hundred thousand unaccompanied children that have crossed the border under Biden's watch, 85,000 of them, the government cannot contact. They haven't been able to make contact with 85,000 of these young children. And there's multiple reasons here, but just that statistic alone should be shocking. And this is also where they're not being honest with us when they think that they're keeping track of these folks. Not just the children, but the adults as well. I mean, we have no idea where these people are. We have no idea. Well, we're giving them cell phones. Well, number one, what on earth is the government doing giving illegal immigrants cell phones? All right. Number one, why is the government in that business? Well, we're trying to track them. Well, you think these people are dumb enough to keep that phone on them if they want to get arrested by ICE and deported? No. Who's going to keep a government phone on them if they have any concern about being deported, or maybe they're caught up in illegal activity, maybe they themselves are like a drug smuggler, they're not going to hang on to this government device that you can track. No, these people are smarter than that. I mean, just the act alone of getting across the southern border is no easy day. And I'm not saying that it's hard or we make it hard. I mean, we've got the gates wide open, folks. But I'm just saying, if these people, mostly the adults, have the wherewithal and the money to get smuggled across the southern border, I mean, they're at least, you know, doing the math. So they're not going to hang on to this government tracking device and say, yeah, here I am. I'm a criminal. Come get me. I'll show up anywhere you want me to show up. No. Look at the court records. How many of these people show up at their court date? Very few. A very small percentage of these illegal immigrants actually show up at their court date when it is appointed. So we don't have a handle of this situation, and we need to find out where these kids are. I mean, this whistleblower said that basically the U.S. government's the middleman in this human smuggling operation. Folks, this is some sick stuff, and this is all going on under the Biden administration, and they don't have a problem with it. Who needs to know where the kids are? This is a nightmare that must be addressed. We'll be back.
Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Tucker Carlson was surprisingly ousted from Fox News the Monday after he gave a rousing speech for the Heritage Foundation, during which he argued the outdated binary political lens is woefully inadequate to confront the issues of our day. He stressed that abortion zealotry and the transgenderism movement are theological phenomena. Political rhetoric is insufficient to confront and defeat objective evil. Reports are swirling now that Carlson's spiritual talk made Rupert Murdoch, Fox Corporation CEO, uncomfortable. Is that why they fired their most popular host?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Raising Godly Girls Minute with Patty Garibay of American Heritage Girls.
Smartphone overuse in adolescents has risen sharply over the last 3 years, sparking a distancing effect through a behavior known as fubbing. Yes, you heard that correctly, fubbing. This is a combination of snubbing another person by opting to look at a smartphone rather than interact. So even if your girl doesn't have social media, if her friend does, the alienation effect fuels loneliness and disconnection. As a Christ follower, your girl's calling as a friend is one that begs relationship, eye contact, and shared experiences. If she's feeling alienated by others, help her to identify and thank God for a trusted friend who is available, even if it's only one friend. If she's opting for the phone over the friend, it may be time for a phonectomy when possible.
Want to learn more? Read about empowering girls through the love of God at RaisingGodlyGirls.com.
Hey friends, it's Jessica Peck, Dr. Nurse Mama, as your 1 minute parenting coach. Do you feel like your teens don't ever listen to you? Teen brains work like a police scanner, monitoring for conversation about them. They often hear words of pain. Why is she always so moody? He's so irresponsible. She just makes things miserable around here. Are you ever going to clean your room? Teen translation, I'm a very undesirable person. It takes 5 positive affirmations to counter each negative comment. So instead of initiating dead-end conversations, try a compliment in front of others, even for the smallest thing. Over time, you'll build a treasure trove of affirmation that will counterbalance words when you're not at your best. I'll see you on the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast here on American Family Radio.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program, At the Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you today on the program. On this topic that I was covering in the last segment, this is very scandalous what's going on with the Biden administration, these unaccompanied children. So we'll continue to track that. And that was a testimony from an HHS whistleblower. Her name is Tara Lee Rodas, R-O-D-A-S, and she worked down in Texas for the Department of Homeland Security and Health and Human Services on this situation. So, very, very sad, to be honest with you, what's going on with these children, or what we really don't know what's going on with them. Very, very sad and disappointing. I do want to introduce our next guest. Brad Hopp is with us. He's with Samaritan Ministries. He's a member with Samaritan Ministries, and he's on with us now. Brad, welcome to the Core.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, Brad, before we talk about Samaritan Ministries and your personal experience there, you also have a little bit of experience with human trafficking in Asia. Tell us a little bit about that.
So my business partner is a missionary over there in communist Asia, and he and the team rescue underage girls out of sex trafficking. They started this about 7 or 8 years ago. Time kind of runs together. So I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago that they started that. And then he and I paired up and we started Teshua Tea Company as a way of helping the girls that they're rescuing to become economically stable and on their own feet. when they leave our rescue facility.
So this, I think that's Brad. I want you to speak a little bit to this. I know you don't have extensive background here, but when we talk about Asia or wherever and human trafficking, a lot of people think that this is just a foreign issue. This is just a foreign subject. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a big deal even domestically, right?
Well, America is one of the biggest consumers of trafficking. And this particular country that Andrew, my business partner, works in, they've actually imported their technology. Their brothels are actually karaoke clubs, and they've imported this technology into the U.S. And so there, you go out to the West Coast and you'll see brothels that are karaoke clubs that are really covers for the different brothels and stuff. And so that's where, really America has a lot of culpability in this whole thing.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, tell us about Samaritan Ministries, Samaritan's Ministries International, and your personal experience there.
So 6 years ago, I had a tractor rollover just to start there, and barrel rolled this tractor onto myself from 6 feet up on the shoulder of the road, and it landed on my pelvis and broke that and stuff. And with Samaritans, the thing that I really love about Samaritans is, you know, out of that whole experience, our share of it was $300, and then the Samaritan members covered the rest of it. And that's the part that ties into what Teshua is doing, because we both organizations are all about helping others, and that's the part that I really like about Samaritan is we as members contribute to each other's medical bills, and you know, it's really a lot of fun to get cards and letters and, hey, we're praying for you, we're thinking about you and stuff. And they send the payment direct to the members. So
yeah, and that's kind of what I want you to address as a process a little bit. And I know it may vary per individual a little bit, but mostly overall it's a pretty similar process. And once again, we're talking about right. Samaritan Ministries, which is a Christian healthcare sharing cost ministry that Brad is a part of. But what's the process? I know a lot of people get a little bit intimidated because it's not your typical, you know, private insurance where you file claims, or maybe it is similar. Tell us a little bit about the process.
So what we do is when we go to the doctor, we tell them we're self-pay, and then we get an itemized bill from them, and then we submit that to Samaritan, and then Samaritan sends that out to a certain number of members, and then they all are directed to send their payments that month to us, and then we turn around and pay our medical bills with it. So yes, it's a little bit more work, but it also allows us to be, I think, a little bit better stewards of our finances, because we know, for example, one payment a year goes to a Samaritan. All the rest of the payments every year go to a direct to a member. So I know every month that we're exactly my money's going. It's not going to overhead. It's not going, you know, I know that one payment a year is going to overhead, but all the rest of my payments are going direct to a member, and they're going to help that particular member. And so then it also allows us to negotiate with the hospitals or the doctors and get a little better rates and so on and so forth. So
Yeah, good stuff, Brad. This helps our audience, those who may be interested in this type plan. Hey, where can folks find out more about Samaritan Ministries and read more into these healthcare sharing plans?
So it's SamaritanMinistries.org, if I remember correctly. And you can just look up Samaritan Ministries. It's like I said, we've been with the company or the organization for like 7 or 8 years, I think now. And I love it.
Amen. Hey, Brad, appreciate your testimony there, giving our audience a little bit of background on how this healthcare sharing costs, the private route here, and the nonprofit route, really, how you can help other believers in Christ, other Christian families. Thanks so much for coming on the Core.
Sure. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's Brad Hopp. He's a member of Samaritan Ministries. Once again, that URL is SamaritanMinistries.org. SamaritanMinistries.org is that URL. You can check out more about their plans. I want to shift topics a little bit here. You know, that we're heading into, whether we like it or not, we're heading into this presidential race season, presidential election season. And before we get to the general election in 2024, we're going to have this thing called a Republican primary. And boy, these primary races, whether it be Republican, Democrat, I mean, these things are, they're awful. They're just terrible. I mean, it's probably the worst of the worst of politics happens during these primary seasons. And that's because you got people that are mostly on the same side of the issues, mostly aligned ideologically. And they're just in this food fight with, like, who can be the nastiest, who can be the most childish. And it's just rather not healthy. Let me just say that, rather not healthy. And that's what we're unfortunately heading into in the next, 6 to 12 months. And before I jump deep into this topic, I just want to encourage our audience to just try to keep your head on right. Try to don't get too into this, because a lot of this stuff's just for show, just to be honest with you. A lot of these primary spats between people of the same ideology, people of the same political party, a lot of it's just for show, and they're trying to duke it out and win over votes and make each other look bad. And I think it's really, really, really just a big waste of time, at least in the grand scheme of our country. Well, speaking of a waste of time, Governor DeSantis down there in Florida is like, is starting. We thought he was popular amongst Republicans and conservatives and people who love freedom. But all of a sudden, we've got a lot of people that are running for president that are, waking up, and all of a sudden they just don't like DeSantis. You know, these are people who were cheering on DeSantis 3 months ago, but all of a sudden now they've just had this epiphany, and all of a sudden DeSantis bad, DeSantis bad. It almost rivals this Trump derangement syndrome. But Vivek Ramaswamy, he's running for president as well. He's running on the Republican side. And from what I hear from him, he seems pretty likable. He's got some very good story, how he grew a business in the U.S. He's got an America First type mentality, very pro-business, pro-freedom. But anyway, he had an epiphany too, and all of a sudden, Governor DeSantis is a bad guy. Listen to him on Chuck Todd throwing DeSantis under the bus. Clip two.
Let me ask you about the Disney dust-up with Ron DeSantis. On one hand, I assume you agree with pushing back at Disney the way Governor DeSantis has rhetorically. But is there a point where you think it is too much to use government to punish business?
Here's where Ron DeSantis really lost it here. He's gone on the wrong path. As he claimed, and this part actually sounded good to me, Disney should have never had crony capitalist lobbying-related privileges in the first place. Here's the part he doesn't mention. One of those crony capitalist privileges was, and I think the most relevant one, was codified into law by none other than Ron DeSantis in 2021. Mm-hmm. So Florida passed this political anti-discrimination statute, which I applauded at the time, mm-hmm. said if you operate internet companies, this includes streaming services like Disney does, that you can't engage in viewpoint discrimination. Now here's the funny, dirty little secret of that. They wrote into a last-minute exception into that law for mm-hmm. anyone who also operates a theme park more than 25 acres in the state of Florida. That's crony capitalism. And so the irony is Ron DeSantis, who's now railing against crony capitalism and rolling that back, was the one who actually passed that into law for the case of Disney. So I think that undermines the credibility of his crusade.
All right. Well, when you watch that without further context or without the rest of the story, and then that used to be an old newscast, the rest of the story, When you listen to that without the rest of the story, without the full context, you go, oh my goodness. I mean, Governor DeSantis, he befriended Disney and he gave them a special provision. And oh my, he just must not be the governor we thought he was. Well, the rest of the story is that the next year in 2022, Governor DeSantis signed a bill and repealed that provision, repealed that special exemption for Disney in 2022. So that's not fully true. That's what people call a half truth. All right. What Ramaswamy was saying there. But the other thing is that that's been out here. We're going on over 2 years now where this information's been out there. And this guy's all of a sudden running for president, and all of a sudden it's noteworthy. All right. He hadn't been talking. The Ramaswamy hadn't mentioned that at all the last 2 years. And that's been a fact for over 2 years now. But that was repealed in 2022 last year by Governor DeSantis as well. But it just shows. And then last week I played the clip of Nikki Haley bashing Governor DeSantis for the whole Disney spat and saying, you know, we'll welcome Disney in South Carolina. We'll take their 70,000 jobs. We'll take their business. Really? So we've got Disney over here who wants to groom little children, and we've got Disney over here that wants to talk to little children about sex. They think that K through 12 schools and teachers ought to be able to talk to kids about sexual orientation, gender identity, homosexuality, and transgenderism. That's what they were pushing for when they were pushing back against the bill in Florida. So we've got that, and then we've got Governor DeSantis wanting our kids to be shielded from this ideological depravity. So we got these two extremes here. And we've got Nikki Haley and Ramsway coming up saying, yeah, I'm for Disney. Let's go, Disney. And then you've got Trump over here on Truth Social, you know, firing shots over at Governor DeSantis like every 3 hours. And then you've got Don Jr. over here on his podcast saying, look, you know, I know Anheuser-Busch. I know Bud Light put a transgender dude who thinks he's a girl on their cans, but you know, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, come on, guys. We got bigger fish to fry. Oh, okay. Do we? Where are they? This is, folks, the issue of the day. This is the issue of the day, is being able to pretend like you can alter reality. Pretending like a man can put on a dress and some lipstick, and all of a sudden, boom, he's a female. Look at the miracle there. And then you've got Disney Corporation pushing for this law, or pushing against this law in Florida a year or two ago. And they're saying, no, kindergartners need to know about sex. We got to be able to talk to kindergartners about transgenderism. We need to be able to talk to kindergartners about homosexuality. That's what they're saying. And so we got these two extremes here. And how anybody who calls themselves a conservative or a Republican can start shooting arrows, not across the field, but within their own trench, shows what this is really about. For some of these people, it's not about a root cause. It's not about core convictions. It's not about pushing back against this immoral depravity, sick garbage. For some of these people, it's about name recognition. It's about running for president, not because you think you can win or you think you'll be a good leader, but because you want to do all the media tours and the fundraising and get your salary paid for by the voters for the next, I don't know, 12 to 24 months. I mean, some of these people, there's no chance they're going to win the nomination. They're polling under 10%, like 1 or 2 or 3%. And so if that's the reality, then what on earth are they doing? Well, they're running a name recognition tour. They're publishing a book, trying to make a buck. And they're not only doing all that, but then they're firing shots at people that are ideologically aligned on all of these issues. Disney is not a friend. The groomers aren't our friend. The pedophilia sympathizers aren't our friends. So look, our movement of pushing back against this insanity is not all that big to begin with. The last thing we need to be doing is firing shots at each other. I mean, folks, this is not middle school. We're not 12 years old. Let's get it together. Let's act like adults, and let's act like we want to do something to restore a sense of moral truth and biblical morality in this culture. We'll be back in just a few.
So they asked me to enter my email address, And the next thing I know, I start getting emails from companies I never even knew existed. What's up with that?
Here at the American Family Association, you have our word that we won't give away, sell, or lease your email address to any other organization or company. We're thankful when you take the time to subscribe to AFA Action Alerts, 1 Million Moms, Engage Magazine, or any of our other online newsletters.
What does the American Family Association stand for? We believe that our ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on earth, belongs to God, and our role is that of a trusted manager. These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
In His image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality is changing hearts and lives.
It speaks directly to the power and the grace of God.
Gives me hope for people that I know that are struggling.
The whole idea of In His image has moved me.
We actually had one gentleman contact us, and he said that this film changed his mind about this issue. We had a pastor reach out to us, and he said that he'd been struggling with hatred in his heart towards people in the LGBTQ community, and this film helped him to realize he needed to have compassion and show people the love of Christ. We also had this same-sex attracted couple contact us, and they said after seeing the film, they wanted to live obedient lives for Christ no matter what, and they said, please pray for us. We know this is going to be hard. We've even had people come to faith in Jesus through In His Image.
To find out more, visit inhisimage.movie.
Here's Ellis Kraft of Reach a Village Ministries.
The fabric of any society is the family. We have seen in Scripture how whole households believed in the Lord when the gospel was preached to them. I love that at Reach a Village, we focus on bringing the gospel to the unreached. We are starting house churches where families are discipled together. These children will be raised up in households of faith. I encourage you to get involved today. During this radio campaign, any gift will be doubled up to $30,000. That means $5 will reach 10 children, $50 will reach 100 children. To give, I want you to go to reachavillage.org/AFR or call 833-773-2247. Again, that's 833-7-REACH-7. Again, that's 833-7-REACH-7.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program. Glad to be with you today on The Core. Walker Wildman here with you. Hey, I do want to introduce our next guest. John Sweppy's with us. He's Director of Policy over at the American Principles Project, or otherwise known as APP. John's with us now. Hey, John, welcome to The Core.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Well, John, your group's been working with others along with AFA here on this Title IX issue, where the Biden administration is doing exactly what I was talking about in the last segment and pushing this narrative of falsehood that dudes can become girls and girls can become boys and it's all normal and it happens every day. And furthermore, grown men ought to be able to compete against women in women's sports. So tell us what's going on with this Title IX nonsense.
Yeah, well, remember that Joe Biden ran on a return to normalcy, and that's what we were told. And, when American Principles Project was running campaign ads about his radical transgender agenda, we actually got removed by Facebook as misinformation. Turns out it was all true. This is actually one of their passion projects, is implementing, gender identity at every aspect, throughout every aspect of civil rights law. And, we're seeing it in sports. We're seeing it with their commitment to transgendering kids, as many as possible. We're seeing it with their commitment to indoctrinating kids in education by pushing this stuff in schools. We're seeing it in the military. We're seeing it everywhere. And, Title IX, I think, is a big part of that. But really, all throughout the administration, their regulatory push is to totally erase women from law. And, The sad thing is that right now the media obviously isn't doing their job. They're not covering it. And so it's up to us and up to activists and up to conservatives to highlight this and hold the Democrats accountable in the next election.
Talk a little bit about this coalition that I'm a part of, your group's a part of as well. But this Stop Abusive and Violent Environments Save Act or Save Group, talk a little bit about that coalition work there.
Well, Save is a wonderful coalition of state and federal activists where we've really been trying to, concentrate our efforts at various state efforts, to try to prevent this stuff. And we've actually had a lot of success. You look at, what's happening at the state legislatures, where we have lots of states passing protections to prevent boys from competing in girls' sports. You have efforts to ban the, I like to call it sterilization because that's what it is, the sterilization of children via these transgender procedures and surgeries. And, it's been wildly successful because of a lot of great organizations and also, because state legislatures are not messing around. They understand that we have to protect the family, we have to protect our kids. And so that's going to take being aggressive. I wish that Congress reacted with the same aggression that these state legislatures have, because I think we'd be in a better spot today.
Yeah. John, when we talk about this subject, I mean, the left would like us to think that the country split on this topic, or furthermore, that there's more people that are for this transgender mania than are against it. But, John, really, I mean, wouldn't you agree that actually the majority, if not overwhelming majority, of voters and citizens are not in favor of this depravity?
Absolutely. No, what the left does is they try to find, a poll question phrase, just the perfect way to try to get the American people to support their agenda. And usually, even when they frame it the best way possible, they might get 40% to support them. But ultimately, when you're asking, just basic questions about the results of their policies, where you don't, cloak it in euphemisms like talking about discrimination or whatever, women's sports, 60% of Americans want to protect women's sports. You look at banning sex changes for kids, that number's even higher. It's like 70 or 75%. Even when you look at things like limiting pornography, implementing age verification for kids, that number is north of 80%. So we've done a lot of polling at American Principles Project. We obviously run ads as well in these campaigns and elections. And I can tell you, it works. The issue is a very powerful one. You see Republicans starting to pick up on that, starting to use it in their own messaging. But ultimately, this is the Democrats' biggest liability. And they're not going to stop their commitment to this agenda anytime soon. So we're going to have to democratically hold them accountable to do it.
Yeah, John, the states are becoming increasingly polarized from one to another, comparing states, to other states. And this, so far, this whole, pushing back against this transgender and other, it just doesn't stop at transgenderism, but this whole, sexual perversion, sexualizing children, this whole stuff's been, to your point, many states have pushed back very hard against this to the good, which is great. I mean, they're basically becoming safe havens for sanity and protecting children. But do you see this being picked up by the court system at any point, taking it to the Supreme Court? I mean, the last person I want touching any of these state laws is the Supreme Court, just because they seem, every time they touch something, they seem to break it, kind of like the federal government. But do you see the left trying to get this thing up to the Supreme Court to get a Obergefell-type overturning, or is this mostly a state's issue that will remain a state's issue?
Well, I think with the left, you have to recognize that they're never going to allow us to keep something a state issue, right? We just saw that with the, unfortunately, another Supreme Court ruling, but on the abortion issue with the abortion pill, right? Mm-hmm. Now, even states that have bans on abortion are still going to have the abortion pill within their borders. So, when it comes to this, yeah, I think the left is finding any pretense they can. They're citing the 14th Amendment. They're doing all sorts of stuff to say that it's illegal to say, keep men's and women's sports separate. Or I think the even more serious issue, it's illegal to prevent kids from being sterilized by quack doctors, which I think, you know, is absolutely within the state's purview to do. So we have to recognize that. Hopefully the Supreme Court will ultimately get a case that rules our way. But in the meantime, I think we have to assert, you know, the legislature's, you know, authority to also say what the Constitution does. And I think that that matters at the federal level, right? Yeah. Ultimately, I love federalism. You love federalism. It would be ideal if that was where things stood. But the left doesn't care about states' rights, and the Biden administration already is doing everything it can to usurp these states and the laws that they've passed. And so I think we need to recognize that we're ultimately going to need a federal solution. We're going to need a federal protection on women's sports, kind of like what the House passed last week. We're going to need a federal ban on sex changes for kids. And hopefully the presidential candidates, I know President Trump has said some really good stuff on this. Hopefully the presidential candidates will commit to that. And if we get them elected in 2024, whether it's Trump or DeSantis or whoever, that'll be a priority in the next administration.
Yeah, it absolutely has to be. I mean, we've got to shore up this Title IX. I mean, who would have thought, you know, and we know for certain that the people writing Title IX years ago were not sitting around the table talking about transgenderism and dudes wearing dresses and dudes, you know, putting on girls' swimming suits and swimming with NCAA women, female swimmers. So we know that the intent of the law is good. It was purposeful. And it was designed under the pretext that there are two sexes, male and female, all created by God. But unfortunately, you know, John, sometimes we got to step in and clarify the obvious.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we need to recognize that that's the right path forward. This is really simple. You know, a lot of people try to make this complicated issue. It's not. There's two biological sexes, period. And that's what our law should say. Gender identity is a made-up concept. You know, ultimately, it's a mental illness when people are talking about this and really believing it. And we shouldn't have that be reflected anywhere in law. The fact that we're even doing this, you know, I think is an intentional evil effort to try to take down our society. And we need to do everything we can to stop it. So hopefully we will.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, it's been a good year generally, and I think we're moving in the right direction. We just have to keep pressing.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of good things going on at the state level around the nation, to your point, John. Hey, John, appreciate you coming on. Tell our audience where they can read more about the work of APP.
We're over at AmericanPrinciplesProject.org, and you can find us on Twitter at AP Project.
All right. Hey, John, thanks so much for coming on the Core.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right. Good interview there. Group, that coalition group I told you about that John and I mentioned was SAVE, Stop Abusive and Violent Environments. That group's working to shore up Title IX and fight back against this insanity is what it really is. And, you know, to John's point, isn't it the goal and the intent of Satan himself to stir up unnecessary confusion? I mean, just go back to Genesis 1. Go back to the early days of creation, Adam and Eve in the garden, and Satan raising the question, did he really say not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Did he really say that? And of course, we read that now as believers, and we go, you know, what were Adam and Eve thinking? I mean, it was clear. God was clear. He didn't mince words. He didn't, you know, make it complex and confusing. He said, this is the one tree you are not to eat of. But still, our flesh, we found a way. Adam and Eve found a way to confuse things and fumble over themselves. And then before you know it, we had the fall of Adam and Eve. And so that strategy by Satan of raising doubt, raising question, bringing about confusion is still a strategy today. And that basically sums up this fight over human sexuality. I mean, that's really what this is. This is a fight over the very essence of creation. Because if you start shooting holes, if you start shooting arrows into the true belief, the true understanding of the creation account, And did God really create them male and female, or is there some stuff that kind of God missed out on, that God messed up, that he just didn't know what he was doing? Is that, did God really create us male and female? And you plant that seed of doubt. I mean, it really opens up questions and doubt and sin to the overall question of our Creator and his perfect nature. So this is no doubt a spiritual battle, and one that is bringing about confusion amongst the masses. And I was listening to somebody, I think it was actually Tucker Carlson the other day. He was speaking at Heritage Foundation's 50th anniversary. And Tucker Carlson, he is Episcopalian. That's the way he described himself. And so I'm not getting into the, you know, theological differences between Episcopalians and other denominations, but it's clear when Tucker Carlson speaks that he believes that there is a Creator, that he believes in Creator God. And so he was basically saying that we're way past the days in America of having policy debates. You know, we all want the same thing, he said, but we just have a couple of different ways of getting there, right? So, like, we all want lower taxes. Okay, well, I think we need to have a 4% tax rate. And, you know, Joe over there, who's a Democrat, thinks it needs to be 7%. So he and I are going to fight it out over 3 or 4 or 7% tax rate. But we all agree that the taxes need to be lower. All right, it's just how low do we go? And you can extrapolate that, you know, to any other policy debate. But we are not, Tucker Carlson concluded by saying that we are not in the days of policy debates anymore, folks. And the reason he can say that and the reason he's right is because just think about the things that we are arguing over. Think about the things that we are debating over. We are having to spend energy and breath saying to everybody that there are only two sexes. We're having to write laws, the people that still have their head on straight, we're having to write laws clarifying that there are only two sexes. We're having to push back and debate people that think that that adults ought to be able to do inappropriate things with minors and castrate them. We're actually having to debate that topic. We're having to spend time, energy, money, and resources on that topic. The differences here, the ideological chasm, is the biggest I've ever seen it in modern American political history. Has America ever been this divided? I don't know. Probably so, maybe, over other issues. But this is a big one. This is a big one, a historical one, where God's very natural order is being questioned and combated and just overall assaulted on many, many fronts. Should babies be protected, or should they be able to kill babies? That's a topic of debate. And we just read Romans chapter 1. We just read Sodom and Gomorrah, and we go, oh my, how could they be so bad? Well, to be honest, folks, look around. Is America much better? We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.